you know, there's going to be sort of a wide bridge that we're going to need to fill by working together, because this community's ready, and we know that our agricultural lands need more stewards, and being able to connect everyone and support each other in our philosophies and our values, I think it's time.
Welcome to the 340th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. Rodrigo Cala believes in the part of the American dream that has formed the seedbed for many an entrepreneurial enterprise. The Western Wisconsin vegetable and livestock farmer believes that Latinos like him have proven to be hard workers in the farm economy. So why, he asked a couple dozen participants in a recent LSP workshop on farmland access, can't new immigrants also own and operate their own farms? In some ways, there was nothing new about this workshop Rodrigo was speaking at. Its content was similar to what LSP has presented to prospective beginning farmers for the past 8 years during such sessions. Participants are taking through a values and goals exercise. The basics of setting up financials for a farm business are covered. Ways of connecting with landowners who may have acres to rent or sell are discussed, and resources available through government agencies and nonprofits to help launch and support one's farm business dream are shared. Finally, such workshops consist of a panel of farmers who have utilized creative strategies for accessing that most valuable of ag resources, farmland. But the 2024 version of the Land Access Are You Ready workshop, which was held on an overcast Saturday in April at a church in Northfield, Minnesota, had a different twist. It was presented in Spanish. Spanish-speaking people have long been part of the agricultural economy, serving as seasonal produce harvesters, employees of livestock operations, or workers in food processing facilities. But according to the latest U.S. Census of Agriculture, only 754 Minnesota farmers identify themselves as Latino or Hispanic. Over 114,000 identify as white. The past few years, LSP's Farm Beginnings course has seen an uptick in enrollment on the part of Latinos and other people of color. And organizations like the Latino Economic Development Center are seeing an increase in demand for their farmer-related resources. But just as other beginning farmers have discovered, getting training on the basics of raising crops, produce, or livestock isn't enough. Access to land is a major barrier. That's why LSP has been holding land access workshops and otherwise attempting to connect landowners and prospective farmers. At this particular workshop, which was made up of an even mix of men and women of varying ages, some were in their 20s while others were well into their 60s, the excitement around farming was palpable. One of the reasons the 2024 version of Land Access Are You Ready had a new linguistic twist is because of Alondra Cano, a Farm Beginnings graduate who, after taking the same workshop in 2023, told LSP organizers Karen Stetler and Robin Moore, this workshop needs to be offered in Spanish. Alondra has since bought a farm in western Wisconsin's Polk County, where she's launching an enterprise to raise heirloom corn based on traditional varieties that originated in her homeland in Mexico. Alondra's family moved to Minnesota when she was 10, and she grew up in a small rural town where, among other things, she earned money detasseling corn. She later served on the Minneapolis City Council, and during the past few years has pursued her dream of using regenerative farming practices to help immigrants reconnect with their culture via food. She's hoping that her Hungry Turtle Farm can serve as that link by not only growing heirloom varieties, but milling them as well. In preparation for the 2024 Land Access Are You Ready workshop, Alondra spent several months interviewing Latinos who are interested in farming. She asked them what challenges they face when it comes to becoming agricultural entrepreneurs, what resources would help give them a leg up, and how LSP's Spanish language workshop should be structured. I attended the April workshop, and it was clear the conversations Alondra had with farmers and prospective farmers had paid off. There were lots of energized discussions, and the participants were excited about taking the next steps needed to pursue their farming dreams. Later, when I interviewed Alondra for this podcast, she shared how the conversation she had unearthed some important insights related to what's needed to give this new generation of emerging agrarians a fair chance at not just getting started, but thriving. It's not just about translating a workshop or USDA fact sheet into Spanish. It's going to take a community effort that provides the material and moral support needed to be a successful farmer. And such support efforts will be well worth it, she says, given the benefits emerging farmers can provide the land, communities, and our local food system. So you mentioned the land access workshop. That's something we've been doing for several years, I think about 8 years or so. It's called Farm Land Access, Are You Ready? And it's just a workshop to help get folks who maybe take that next step as far as how to find land, what are some of the programs that are available, that kind of thing. So I first met you in 2023 at one of the workshops that we had, the Farm Land Access workshops, and you said at the end of that, this needs to be in Spanish. So lo and behold, a year later, we had one in Spanish, and I thought it went really well. I'm interested in your perspective, but you facilitated that. One of the things that you have been doing in the interim is you've been having conversations with Latino farmers about some of the challenges they face, some of kind of what they're interested in, what kind of farming they're interested in, that kind of thing. Yeah, I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about what you've been learning from some of those conversations and what people are thinking as far as the challenge. It's a little bit the same with that we've seen with our Farm Beginnings program over the years, is there's all these challenges in agriculture, but boy, there's a lot of opportunity. And I'm wondering if that's some of the things that you're learning as well through some of these conversations.
I do recall, you know, meeting you there at the Land Access Workshop, and at the end of it, you know, we do an evaluation, and, you know, part of the evaluation was, you know, what could we do differently, or what are some of your other thoughts? And sure enough, you know, I proposed hosting a similar workshop in Spanish for other agricultural leaders like myself who are connected to, you know, this cultural foods component and want opportunities to go into the agricultural field, but may not always have all the tools, knowledge, and resources to do so. So thankfully, Karen Stettler, you know, who's an amazing leader here at LSP, a very brilliant, kind, generous spirit, said, yes, we should do that, and let's work on that, and let's talk about it, and let's plan for it, and let's raise some resources to make it happen. So we began working together on those plans, and it took what felt about, you know, a year. You know, it was probably from start to finish, it's probably been about a year now. And the project first started by engaging and interviewing Spanish-speaking agricultural affiliated folks to see what are their experiences, what are they feeling, what are they thinking, and would they find a workshop like this helpful. What's been illuminating about that is to learn that out of the, you know, 15 people or so, all these, you know, Spanish-speaking community members that I interviewed for about an hour to an hour and a half, have a variety of educational backgrounds. So, you know, some of them are veterinarians that were trained in Mexico and then were brought here with special visas. Some of them have business degrees and are looking to start their own agricultural enterprise. Others are, you know, their background is in IT, and so they're interested in sort of technology and figuring out how technology fits in with agriculture. Other people were involved in the hospitality industry and in wine production. You know, I remember interviewing a person who used to own a winery in Ecuador, and he was interested in, you know, continuing that work here and wanted to see how to start vineyards, you know, in the Midwest region. So a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different genders and countries. The most prominent countries, you know, are Mexico and Ecuador still today. The three, you know, I would say themes that were most visible throughout those, you know, interviews was, number one, folks are feeling isolated. You know, they're feeling like they've got these dreams, they want to accomplish these agricultural initiatives, but they don't know who to talk to, they don't know who to connect with, they don't know each other, you know, across the spectrum, and they're not sure where to get information, and they're not sure how to get information in the language that they speak. So there is quite a bit of isolation happening within this group, that in that they really feel outside of the fold, outside of the mainstream flow of information, policy making, conferences, conversations, and I think, you know, organizations like LSP could certainly play a role in that. The second theme is the immigration status. And so still today in 2024, we do not have a fair fair, humane, dignified immigration reform. Many people are still facing issues that relate to lack of access to a driver's license, lack of access to work authorization or immigration status that will allow them to feel stable, welcomed, and secure here. And so while some people do come with a visa because they're, trained educationally some in Mexico or other places, other folks are coming here out of, deep necessity and sacrifice and desire to survive. And so we do see that that is still very much a large barrier when folks are undocumented, living and working here, and in many instances, essentially carrying the entire milk production system in dairy farms that will, milk anywhere from 1,000 to 1,600 cows. And so, folks who have been living here for 14, 15 years without their papers, but will get up every day at 3 a.m. and milk those cows and be done by noon and go to their second or third, shift at 1 p.m., 2 p.m., those are the folks that are still feeling that pressure. And I hope that the agricultural industry also feels that pressure and is mobilizing to change it, because it is really an unfair, unjust situation for many of our Latino families and agricultural leaders.
Well, one of the things that one of the speakers on the panel for the workshop was Rodrigo Kayla, and he made a super good point. He said, hey, we have a reputation of being really hard workers. Mm. Great. We've been involved with agriculture in one way or the other for a long time. Mm-hmm. We have to start seeing, why should we assume we can't be entrepreneurs? That's great that we've been involved in agriculture, but we haven't been involved in it as owners of the farms, business, managers of the farms. It's been in that more worker role. So I thought that was a really good message to get across.
Yes, and that's where LSP plays a role in helping to facilitate and empower and capacitate these agricultural workers from moving into just, farmhands, but then into ownership and running their own agricultural enterprises. So in addition to isolation and challenges with the lack of fair federal immigration reform, we have the language access issue. Mm-hmm. So many of them express the fact that they feel they would be doing better if they only were able to speak English. And so this relates to, what are the services and supports available for our agricultural community members to access English learning classes, to be connected to people who are willing to teach them and support them in that way, and maybe do a little bit of a language exchange. I teach you English, you teach me Spanish, vice versa. So that was a big piece, is that you have some really amazing people, high caliber, ready to go, ready to purchase their own land, but still feel really face lack of confidence in the language component. Mm-hmm. So those three are the biggest buckets. And then, of course, leading with the fact that, yes, this community is very diverse in terms of their educational attainment, their personal experiences, the contributions they can bring into this field. And as you mentioned, this transition of farmland where the older generations are perhaps sunsetting on their farm work and would love to have, new folks coming in to help them continue, that work on farms. And so those 30 or 35 people we had at the workshop, at the Spanish Land Access Workshop, are ready to go. They're fired up. They're passionate. They're committed. They were really happy to be in one room together. And every single evaluation that I read, because I ended up typing them all up, said, please do this again.
When you were doing these interviews, was there anything that really surprised you?
One thing that was really, I think, sweet for me to hear and to experience with them is just sensing and feeling their deep connections to the earth, their very emotional connection to food and to farming, and how that connects them to a history and a place and space. And some of them would get teary-eyed when we would be talking, and they would really share how working the land, whether it was them renting a plot somewhere or growing their own vegetables in another location, how that was oftentimes seen as a way to heal and as a way to process trauma and to really reinvigorate themselves and really kind of stay healthy and focused. There were lots of really wonderful stories shared about my grandparents used to do this. this, or my mom and dad used to do it like that. And I remember growing up, you know, on a farm, things like that, that people would share, and then they would want to pay it forward, you know, mm-hmm. and it was really a core value for them to continue that tradition of working with the land, with the animals, being in harmony with Mother Earth, and seeing it as such a, you know, spiritual component of their life, and such a sensitive and really vulnerable space for them. And I felt really honored to just be sharing those conversations with them, because it felt like that wasn't something they often get asked. You know, it's sort of like, why do you want to do farm work, and how are you connected to land and agriculture? And so it was really beautiful, you know, to really get a sense of people's rich connections to farming and farm work.
Yeah, I was really struck at the, so during the, at the beginning of the workshop, Karen led a values goals exercise. And then when people kind of, they did a feedback to the general group about what some of their values and some of their goals were, I was like, boy, this sounds very similar to what I hear at a farm beginnings class, or at a soil health workshop or whatever, where those ideas of a land ethic, stewardship, trying to be a benefit to the community by producing healthy food. Boy, it came through. I mean, it was like, it could be in Spanish, but it's like exactly what I've been hearing from farmers who have been drawn to this kind of regenerative ag movement a little bit.
Yeah, it's a really heartfelt connection. It's really sincere, and it's very humble. You know, a lot of the folks who we spoke with during the interview process are looking to wake up with the sun and the rain and go to bed with the moon and the stars, and want to be close to, you know, their cows or the sheep, or you know, like raise, you know, pounds and pounds of vegetables, mm-hmm. you know, grow them and harvest them and bring and share them with community. That was also very, very sweet to hear, is that a lot of them would say, well, look, you know, I've been doing this stuff for many years and I don't know what to do with my vegetables, so I just share them with local, you know, community members. And, you know, there's this kind of notion of community building that happens through agriculture that I think is really palpable and really special. So, yeah, so it was really good to see everyone.
Well, the other thing that really excited me was I was starting to see, between the official presentations and then even afterwards, like in the parking lot, these farmers and prospective farmers talking to each other. So that's the key to regenerative agriculture or the sustainable ag movement, is farmer to farmer passing of knowledge. And so, like you said, these folks, maybe some of them already knew each other, but some were coming from pretty far away and did not know each other. And this is that first step of, like you said, not feeling isolated. And starting to make those connections, that is really exciting.
You're right. The geographic diversity of the locations where these folks came was impressive. I mean, we had people coming all the way from Willmar. We had one person who drove all the way from Anago, Wisconsin, which I think must have been like a 4-hour drive, you know, and we've had people, of course, from St. Paul and from, I think, Albert Lee. And we had, of course, folks from Northfield, because that's where we did the workshop, but a wide variety of locations and also ages. I don't know if you remember, we had lots of families, lots of young children, but also, like, you know, people in their 20s. And then we've had elders, you know, coming that I hadn't seen in like years, and they were coming, you know, to be a part of the workshop. And so that was really also just very, I don't know, just inspiring and exciting to see such wide range of cities represented. Ages, experiences, interests. I think one person, you know, had shared their story of quote-unquote failure and had talked about how, you know, he went into farming and he did X, Y, and Z, and then he had to sort of close down all of the operations and consider restarting. And just being able to kind of hold that experience together and say, hey, that wasn't failure. That was actually a huge learning opportunity, and we're so glad you're here, and we're so glad we can keep going and moving forward. And indeed, you know, months later, we're still all talking to each other. We text each other. We're visiting each other's farms. We're building a network. We're, you know, brainstorming ideas. We're like connecting resources. And so this is a fertile space, I think, for LSP to continue to do work, whether it's convening or advocating with and for, you know, this group of Spanish-speaking farmers and would-be farmers, mm-hmm. And also just helping to navigate, like I said, you know, that language access component and serving as a bridge between these community members and the FSA or the Minnesota Department of Agriculture or Compeer. You know, there's going to be sort of a wide bridge that we're going to need to fill by working together because this community's ready, and we know that our agricultural lands need more stewards, and being able to connect everyone and support each other in our philosophies and our values, I think it's time.
A few years ago, I did a podcast interview with she was a young graduate student who had done some research in central Minnesota on Spanish-speaking farmers who were looking for information. And what she kind of discovered was it's not enough for the local FSA office or NRCS office to just provide fact sheets in Spanish. That it takes creating a welcoming atmosphere and kind of acknowledging some cultural differences as far as passing of information. Is that something that you've run into a little bit? That it's not just a matter of, okay, well, we'll have a fact sheet, the same fact sheet, but it'll be in Spanish and here you go kind of thing.
Absolutely. I try to help people view this as, imagine that you have a student going to college for the first time, first-generation college student. You're going to need that advisor. You're going to need that mentor. You're going to need that coach. You're going to need that family support to all make it happen. Mm-hmm. And so in similar ways, you might present somebody with, like, the fact sheet that's in Spanish from the FSA, but they might not know what the FSA is. They might not know a lot of the terminologies. Mm-hmm. They might feel like this is overwhelming and they can't do it on their own. And so I do feel like we need to be really personalizing, you know, personalized approach, having that one-on-one relationship and connection, having those in-person experiences where you are touring a farm, you are seeing how the chickens are raised, you are seeing how the hazelnut trees were planted. All of those pieces inform and empower somebody to take the next steps, because then they can visualize themselves doing a very specific, pragmatic, relevant thing, and then might be able to connect it better to that piece of paper. So we do need a lot of the, you know, navigators. For example, Aaron Bleeth from LEDC, he's mm-hmm. one of the navigators. We've got organizations like Marble Seed who, you know, have those organic specialist mentors who can help farmers or would-be farmers to transition into organic or remain organic. All of those pieces, we've got to have somebody or a few people orchestrating the connection to the you know, emerging farmers to make sure that we support them in what could be a three-year journey mm-hmm. from where they are today and where they want to be in the future. You're right. It's got to go above and beyond a fact sheet. It really needs to be boots on the ground, real people with real connections and relationships, and then connecting them to those resources and that information and those people and those networks and those ideas and those opportunities in real time, in a relevant way, in an authentic way, mm-hmm. in a way that feels like, hey, I care about you. I care about your journey. I'm going to get to know your family. And in 2 years, we're going to have you be somewhere where you want to be. Right? Like where your goals are, where you're setting your sights, you know, and helping you through those moments of quote unquote failure, you know? So when somebody does need to like downsize their herd, or somebody just survived a drought, you know, and the vegetable production isn't as high as they thought, we're still going to be there with you. And we're going to make sure you make it through. And we're going to figure out what the silver lining here is and continue to advance. Because it is pretty tough. You know, farming is pretty tough, pretty unpredictable, but very rewarding, fulfilling work. And so being able to be supportive of those folks in the high times and in the low times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a little bit of just moral support, just cheering them on, saying, hey, you know, I've been there too. And, you know, you can make it through it kind of thing.
Yep, celebrating when celebrating is due, and you know, holding somebody's hand if they need to cry a little bit, that's okay too. You know, yeah. It's all part of the wonderful project of farming, and yeah. You know.
So that brings up another thing, which is, so you could get all the technical information in the world, great technical information, agronomic practices, figure those out, get hooked into some cost share programs through FSA, and get access to land. One of the things I was thinking, the typical white farmer who walked into this workshop would go, wow, there's this many people who don't look like me who are interested in farming, which is great. And we know that that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, you do look at the U.S. Census of Ag, and vast majority of farmers are white men. But to see this interest just at one workshop shows you the potential. But also we have to be mindful of, if you get all of these skills and you get access to land and then you're in a community that is dominated by older white farmers and just older white residents, that can create tension. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is that where what can we do about kind of, I guess, creating that support? Because farming is such a difficult task. It isn't just the economic support, the kind of even support with some of the techniques. It's also that kind of feeling welcome in the community kind of thing. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. something you've thought about.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought it up because, you know, I would say that about 6 months ago, there was a big story in the Star Tribune about what was happening in one of the small towns in Minnesota when the meatpacking company tried to build a housing facility mm-hmm. for its workers, many of them or all of them immigrant workers who were, of course, working at the meatpacking plant, and how there was just a lot of pushback from people in the city about it, you know, mostly residents who just didn't feel comfortable with something like that. So it speaks to the fact that all of us, you know, in our daily life, in our many ways that we participate in communities can help. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in certain places, people come with their families and their children, and those children go to school. And mm-hmm. so you have to ask yourself, okay, what is the school doing to help create a welcoming, integrative environment to make sure that all the children are getting along and that there's conversations about the transitions happening in our town? Another place that people participate are churches. And so a lot of the folks that I interviewed go to church on Sundays and have Spanish Mass and maybe even just attend English Mass because they're interested in going to church and they don't necessarily have access to a Spanish language Mass. And so that's another place where people can participate and step in and step up. Other places are, of course, you know, like the city councils and the county boards and sort of figuring out how those municipal or county-wide initiatives are recognizing, involving, and supporting towns through these changes, or maybe there are not so much changes, right? Because in the case of two of the people we interviewed, you know, they've been in Western Wisconsin for about 15 years. So they are of the town. They right. are the town. And so maybe just figuring out how we acknowledge and affirm that history and connection. And again, how are we working with those dairy farm owners that are considered technically, I think, medium to small scale, you know, farming? They're not going to be like, you know, thousands and thousands of cattle. They're still in the, you know, 100 range, or, you know, maybe they'll get up to the 1,000 cattle range. How are those folks being engaged in a conversation about supporting the families that come work for them? What are the changes they need and the support they need from the federal government and other entities to be better employers, to be able to provide more, to be able to support more? And so connecting all those dots is really key, and organizations like LSP could probably help with that. There could be other organizations that can play a role, economic development agencies, even organizations like, you know, the statewide FSA directors have a lot of influence over how programming can happen. And so they don't have to see themselves as just a lending agency. They can be out there doing educational workshops. They can be out there convening people, having important conversations. And so in that space of how do we create more welcoming communities for the new face of agriculture, which you could argue isn't so new,
right.
You know, there's a place for everybody to step into that. Schools, churches, small businesses, the chambers of commerce, the economic development agencies, the agricultural groups, you know, there's lots of different little, you know, affinity groups sort of all over embedded in these neighborhoods and communities that can really just make sure to like honor, accept, and take the responsibility of making that space more inclusive and more forward-thinking, you know, because the face of immigration is this today. Who knows what it's going to be, you know, in 20 years.
So kind of looking at your interviews mm-hmm. and going through your notes and also being involved in facilitating this Spanish language land access workshop we did, you're probably getting a pretty good sense of where we're at, but also what we need to do to kind of advance some of these opportunities for folks. I mean, have you given that some thought? What could be in the next few years, what could really help some of these folks you've been talking to, also a lot of the people you haven't been talking to that you know, we haven't been able to connect with yet? What could be some really, either on the combination of maybe policy as well as just some real practical ways of really taking advantage of this opportunity that we have? We got these folks who want to farm, many who come from an agrarian background and, or don't, but just really want to do that kind of farming that we'd like to see out there and live in these rural communities.
Yeah, I think there's three kind of ideas around this as we look at the interviews and we pull out common threads and we kind of consider what does this mean for our work for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, we have to figure out the immigration issue. I do wonder if we need to kind of peel out of the immigration reform discussion and embed it more within the farm bill to say, hey, we know that there are hundreds and hundreds of, undocumented workers in the dairy industry, in the other, in the cattle and, pork, and we need special work authorization and permission for these families to be here, to feel safe, to feel welcome, to feel stable, and to be just their full selves at work and participate, in the community in different ways, to be able to have a driver's license, to be able to send their kids to college, to be able to take out a loan if they need to. All of those pieces are really embedded and connected to, the immigration status that folks are allowed or not allowed to come in. So as the agricultural community, as the farming community, as advocates in that space, we need to zero in on that and figure it out. Mm-hmm. Whether it's increasing the number of visas or loosening up the requirements or grandfathering people in, people like, the two folks that I've mentioned that have been living in Western Wisconsin for a minimum of 14 to 15 years, who have, three children who were born and raised in Wisconsin and are now in the public schools in Polk County. Those parents, they need support. They need to feel like, yes, we believe in you. We want you here, and we're going to work to get your immigration status fixed. And so really figuring out how a think tank of advocates and organizers come together around that to work with our U.S. senators and make that happen, make that a priority. And again, we don't need to get stuck in the, the 20 to 30-year-old argument, at the congressional level about immigration reform. And I know we have presidential elections coming up, so we don't know where that's going to end. Mm-hmm. But finding creative ways to make pathways into solving some of that. We don't have to solve the whole thing, but just something, anything, some level of movement in that direction. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Two, this issue of food security and cultural communities. So if you look at the growth of all of the cultural markets, and by that I mean the sort of, philosophical one, which is, the free market, the cost of goods, the pricing, as well as the physical ones, Mercado Central, Global Market, Malcolm Yards, all of these different places that have come together to serve, cultural foods. Eat Street Crossings is another one, where now you see Korean food, you're seeing Hmong food, you're seeing the Latino chefs, you're seeing all these wonderful cultural foods being served. How can we devise an initiative that really helps to connect and support local cultural farmers from the Hmong, Latino, and other communities to source directly to those cultural markets like Global Market, Mercado Central, and others? So when you walk into those spaces of high culture and you pick up a lemon or a lime, or you pick up some cilantro, that you know it's coming from Minnesota, that you know that it's coming from Worthington, or you know it's coming from Northfield. So being able to really devise a pilot program either through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture or other foundations that really help to connect those local cultural farmers that we know exist in Northfield and Willmar and other places with those actual markets that should be sourcing from them locally. So there's a big gap, right? There's a big hole between those two entities, those two community components, and we need people to step in and braid that, weave that braid, help it come together. Yeah. And then I'll say, lastly, as we look at defining or redefining what an emerging farmer is and what an emerging farmer needs, I think we really need to look into those issues and realize that it's above and beyond a cash down payment assistance program, and more to the issue that you and I just discussed relating to having real people connecting with real families to move them from point A to point B over a period of maybe 1, 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so we should really, you know, evolve and enrich the meaning of what emerging farmers support means and what it takes. And while I want to thank the Minnesota State Legislature for putting together and approving that cash down payment assistance fund for farmers, we need to, you know, round out the rest of that work, because you know, a $10,000, you know, cash down payment for someone may help them advance, but it won't necessarily help them complete the goal or reach the final goal. Mm-hmm. And so really rounding out the definition of that and really populating that space so that U.S. senators and local legislators can understand the full picture of what it's going to take to get new farmers onto the land and help to continue our food production numbers, our food security can be sustained and maintained, and we can ultimately all be better agricultural, you know, workers and farmers and communities, and be ready for the next 10, 20, 30 years. Yeah. Looking back at the workshop that we did with these fabulous, you know, energetic, bright-eyed, you know, farmers who really want to get the work done, just remembering that, you know, we can do that, that we can go into that space of supporting these communities, and we don't have to wait for somebody else to do it, but to really step into that world of need and support, because it's kind of our responsibility to do so. Yeah. And it's also an invitation. You know, everyone was super excited. They heard about it on Facebook. They heard about it through other networks, and they came. And so the work is there and ready. And I think LSP is certainly poised to continue conversations like that and to continue to invest and care about that community and show that care through pragmatic actions, relevant actions. And I invite, you know, other funders, foundations, leaders to help advance that, because we do need more help. And we can't say, oh, well, so-and-so is taking care of it, so we don't have to worry about it. No, we need more and more organizations helping. We need more funders to care about this. We need more governments to pay attention, because ultimately our survival depends on it.
Yeah,
our food, our production, our growing, you know, the way that we feed our families and our people, the things that are in the shelves at the grocery store, all that stuff comes from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that somewhere should be here. It should be in our local communities.
For resources on starting a farming enterprise and getting access to land, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 340 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.